Love is a big word, Marguerite whispered. But she snuggled closer in my arms and rested her head on my shoulder. We'll learn all about it, I whispered back, starting now. I wasn't prepared for the enormous interest the news media showered upon me. As soon as we established orbit around the moon, I was showered with requests for interviews, docudramas, biographies. They wanted me to appear on global net shows, to star in an adventure series. I was a celebrity, asked to sit next to media stars and politicians and make appearances everywhere. Politely but firmly, I turned them all down, giving the news media nothing except the highlights of our expedition, which were dramatic enough to keep viewers all through the Earth-Moon system riveted to their screens night after night for a week. I granted interviews, of course, but very selectively. In each interview, I stressed the idea that Venus's greenhouse warming was completely different from Earth's, that the Earth's warming was largely the result of human actions, and humans could stop the greenhouse if they were willing to make the necessary changes. The Greens at first were furious. I received loud demands to recant my heretical views. I even got threats. But as my message began to sink in, some of the Green leaders started to realize that what I was saying could be beneficial to them, very helpful to their political stance. I still got threats from angered fanatics, but the leadership began to use my interviews as ammunition in their campaigns. Meanwhile, I handed all our data over to Mickey Cochran, who flew up to Lucifer while we were still in lunar orbit, quarantined until the medical inspectors determined that we were not bringing alien diseases back home with us. Of course, we were carrying samples of the Venusian aerobacteria and the fragment of the feeding arm from the creature on the surface, which enormously complicated our quarantine period. Mickey and her fellow scientists were overcome with joy at the samples and all the data about Venus that we had brought back with us. I was offered an honorary membership in the International Academy of Science. Marguerite received a full membership and hints that a special Nobel Prize would eventually be awarded to her. One of my chores while we waited in parking orbit was to contact Gwyneth, who was still living in the flat in Barcelona. She looked as exotic and beautiful as ever. Even on the wall screen of my compartment aboard Lucifer, her tawny eyes and rich, full lips made my pulse throb faster. But after a few moments of chat, I told her, "I'm deeding the flat to you, Gwyneth. It'll be yours, free and clear." She didn't look surprised. She accepted it as if she'd expected as much.
"This is goodbye, then," she said.
It wasn't a question. "I'm afraid so," I said, surprised that I didn't feel any pain. Oh, perhaps a little twinge, but none of the pangs of separation that I thought I'd suffer. She nodded slightly.
"I thought as much. I've been watching your interviews on the news. You've changed, Van. You're not the same person anymore."
"I don't see how I could be," I said, thinking of all that I'd been through.
"You're going to see your father soon."
It was her parting shot, with just enough of a barb in it to tell me that she was far from pleased at my ending our relationship. "I'm going to see him just as soon as they lift quarantine on my ship," I said. She smiled slightly.
"To claim your $10 bill.
"Yes, that," I replied. "And a few other things." Cellini City. It took 2 weeks for the assorted medics and biologists to agree that Lucifer and her crew posed no threat to the human population of Earth and Moon. Once they finally cleared us, I sent Marguerite to my house on Mallorca, telling her, "I've got to see Martin Humphreys before I go home."
"Can't you do this by video phone?" Marguerite asked. "Or you could set up a virtual reality meeting."
"No," I said. "This has got to be face-to-face, him and me, on his turf." So I went down to Cellini City. I was ushered into the sitting room of his residential suite in the Hotel Luna and told, "Mr. Humphreys will be with you shortly, sir." I walked across thick carpeting to the room's actual window. Above-ground buildings were rare on the moon, windows even rarer. I stared out at the rich, glowing crescent of Earth hanging in the darkness outside. There was a stubby black telescope by the window, mounted on a slim tripod. I squinted through the eyepiece, searching for Connecticut, where the family home had been. The sprawling house was in jeopardy from the swelling Connecticut River. As sea levels rose, the entire valley was slowly being drowned by the encroaching waters of Long Island Sound. I swung the scope toward Majorca, but it was off on the limb of the globe, barely discernible. The Majorca house was safe enough, up on its hilltop, but the seawall protecting Palma was already crumbling, threatening the city. It had taken more than a century for global warming to begin causing such disasters. It would take more than a century to correct them, I knew. We had long decades of toil and struggle ahead of us, but I was certain that we had the knowledge and the tools to eventually succeed. "So there you are, stargazing." I straightened up and turned at the sound of his sarcastic voice. "Hello," I said, "Mr. Humphreys." He didn't look a bit different from the last time I'd seen him in the flesh, at his 100th birthday bash. Tall, straight carriage, slim. Dark, form-hugging suit with slightly padded shoulders, and those hard, cold eyes. "Mr. Humphreys." If he was taken aback by the formality of my address to him, he hid it well. He crossed the room and sat on the upholstered sofa beneath an electronic reproduction of some garish neoclassical painting. Delacroix, I thought. Horse-mounted Bedouins in swirling robes racing across the desert with long rifles in their hands. "You're not my father," I said flatly. He didn't blink. "Fuchs told you that." "DNA scans proved it." He let out a breath. "So now you know." "I know why you had my mother murdered," I said. That popped his eyes wide. "She died of a drug overdose. She did it herself. It was suicide, not murder."
"Was it?"
"I loved her, for Christ's sake. Why do you think I hounded Fuchs until he gave her up? I loved her. She was the only woman I ever loved, damn her to hell and back."
"Very loving words," I sneered.
He jumped to his feet, face red, hands jittering agitatedly. "I wanted her to love me, but she never did. She wouldn't let me touch her. And then she went and had a baby. His baby."
"Me."
"You."
"That's why you've hated me all these years," I said.
He gave a short, barking laugh. "Hated you? Nah, that's too active a word. I loathed you, you miserable little runt. Every time I saw you, I saw the two of them laughing at me. Every day of your life was another reminder that she couldn't stand my guts, that she loved that bastard Fuchs, not me."
"So that's why you set up this Venus mission, to get me to kill myself." He seemed startled by the thought.
"Kill you? Ha! Who cared about you? Who the fuck would have thought that you, the weakling, the cowardly, pitiful runt, would take up my challenge? Nobody in his right mind would have expected that. You surprised the hell out of me, let me tell you."
"Then why?"
All of a sudden I saw the truth. Martin Humphreys nodded, understanding the dawning light in my eyes. "It was to kill Fuchs, of course. He was way out in the belt where his fellow rock rats protected him. Besides, I promised your mother that I wouldn't go after him, and despite what you think, I kept my promises to her. Despite everything, I let the son of a bitch live."
"Until you got the idea for the Venus Prize. It was a trap all along."
"Once Alex was killed, I couldn't hold back anymore. I wanted that bastard Fuchs dead. So I dangled $10 billion worth of bait, and sure enough, he came after it."
"And so did I."
Something of his old smirking expression crept back across his face. "That was a bonus. I never expected you, of all people, would take the challenge. But I figured, what the hell? Venus will kill both of you, father and son."
"But I survived."
He shrugged. "I got what I was after. Fuchs is dead. Damned good and dead."
"Maybe not," I said.
He stared at me.
"We froze his body.
Marguerite Duchamp is bringing together the world's top cryonics people to see if he can be revived."
Martin Humphreys staggered back a few steps, his face ashy white, and plopped down gracelessly on the sofa.
"You son of a bitch," he whispered, pronouncing each word distinctly. "You fucking traitorous son of a bitch."
I suppose I should have enjoyed the look of utter shock and confusion on him, but I felt no sense of victory.
no joy of triumph.